Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs, nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. On this installment of Free Culture Radio, we're going to talk about wine. Wine, as I've learned, is more than just grape juice that's been allowed to ferment. For one thing, it's possible to make wine with a number of other plants, not only grapes. There's rice wine, for example. Country wines, as they're sometimes called, can be made with, among other things, dandelions, peaches, strawberries, even rhubarb. But it's the juice of the grape with which we're most familiar, and which has become a major industry in the United States. Oregon is no exception. To learn more about the development of Oregon's wine industry, I spoke with Carl McKnight from the St. Joseph's Winery in Canby, Oregon. In the interest of full disclosure, I need to mention Carl McKnight is a friend, and I am a member of the wine club there at St. Joseph's.
My name is Carl McKnight, and I am the assistant winemaker and MBD at St. Joseph's Winery in Canby in Willamette Valley, Oregon.
Tell me about St. Joseph's.
So Joe and Lily were born in Europe, and they met in the German city of Chicago. Joe was a baker by trade. He came out in the early 60s to Oregon, and they put in a bid on this farm because his grandfather had a winery in Hungary, and they kind of wanted to emulate that. And when they came out here, there were no vineyards, and they planted as one of the first, let's say, 25, 30 wineries in 1978. And prior to that, they would drive down to California and harvest grapes and bring them back up and make wine in his basement.
Is there like a German or Hungarian style? Is that a thing? I mean, right?
So is there a German Hungarian style? Sure. The open bottles of wine are always appreciated, as they are everywhere in the world. Hungary, where Joe came from, has a huge history of winemaking, and Tokaj is the most famous wine from Hungary. And you don't hear a lot about Hungarian wines like you do the French wines or the Italian wines, and that's because the industry was pretty much demolished during the two world wars. And after, you know, Hungary became communist, you know, in the 30s and 40s, and that whole industry kind of went away, and the values and those sort of things was surpassed, or the industry was surpassed by France and Spain and Italy. But certainly there's a great heritage. And is there a style? Sure. Here our style is kind of old world style. We let the grapes speak for themselves. We don't have a lot of fancy equipment and new age technology. So we're kind of doing it a little bit more old school, a little bit more barrel aging, and a little bit more hands off than some of the industry. But the grapes show through and the wines are nice.
Just because I've seen it on TV and in movies, do people actually stomp grapes? Is that a thing?
Is grape stomping a thing? Sure, it absolutely is. And when Joe and Lily started at the winery back in, they planted in 78 and the first legal vintage was 83. And they're fun-loving people from Europe, and they wanted to spread the harvest cheer. So they started a grape-stomping event in 1983 that's kind of like the I Love Lucy show, and this year will be our 39th annual, and we're actually flying a band in from Bavaria to help us celebrate. And yes, people jump in this 600-gallon barrel and stomp grapes, and you don't have to worry about that. We send the juice down to Napa. We have a great time, and we even make our own homemade sausages and kraut to go with it. And that's always the third week of September, and it's a great hokey small town festival.
How do you, I mean, so, okay, what is the process like? This is a thing that, I'm not talking about wine culture, but let's talk about the process for a minute, though, because I think this is fascinating. You take the juice, How the heck? Okay, so the juice sits in a barrel. You add what?
Oh, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah, you don't just leave grape juice in a barrel and walk away for a few months.
No, no, no. There's a lot that goes into making wine that people may or may not be familiar with. So Portland, very famous for breweries, and the big thing, the difference between beer and wine is there's no water in wine. It's 100% juice. And we're known as an estate winery. That means we grow our own grapes. So our season starts in February, where we've cut back the vines for the spring. And then by April, we have a little bloom. And by August, we start to get some color in the grapes. And by September, October, we're harvesting. And after that, we'll press the grapes or stomp the grapes. And then after that, we'll clarify them and add a little yeast, which will convert those natural sugars into the grapes, into that fancy thing called alcohol, which is what makes wine so popular. And then after that part, we're going to age the red wines into oak barrels. And the oak barrels add a little bit of complexity to the wine. So the wine, when it's first pressed, is very fresh and fruity. And then if you want something that has a little bit more layers of flavor, you're going to age those in oak barrels. And those barrels each hold about 25 cases of wine. And the oak barrels are a bit of a labor intensive, and they cost between $500 and $1,500 new and empty. And we'll let them sit in oak barrels anywhere for between a year and 4 years, depending on the wines. And it's up to the winemaker to decide, well, how long is that wine aged and what else are we going to do to it? So there's some other things that we'll do to help the process along, kind of like as a cook would use herbs and spices, we're going to use some special things in the winery to bring out the best flavors and make it taste as great as possible and nice, smooth, bring the fruit forward. And so the process is long, involved, and fun. Because if you can't have fun in this business, you can't have fun.
I'd say, I mean, it's farming, but farming with a kind of a twist is your because you're also processing the. I mean, most farmers don't process their crops there on the spot, but you're doing that. Most people understand the idea of you have a grape, the Pinot Noir grape, and the Chardonnay grapes, and they make. But what's a cuvée?
So cuvée is a fancy word that means special. And so we're an estate winery. So the way the business is set up, there are people that just make wine. There are people that just grow grapes. And we're really crazy and dumb enough to do both. And so we have acres of Pinot Noir, which is the pride and joy of Oregon. And after we press that and put it into barrel, each of those barrels, whether even if it's the same oak from the same row of grapes, each one of those barrels is going to taste different. So for our estate cuvée, which is our special Pinot Noir that we sell here at the winery, we're going to take our favorite tasting barrels and make a special lot out of them. And that is how I've spent this week getting ready to bottle our estate cuvée. So I've chosen about 40 different barrels from the cellar that we blended into a blending tank, and we're working through the nuances. And it's kind of fun to be able to go down and pop a few barrels open, see how they smell, see how they taste, and make our blend as food-friendly, elegant, and drinkable as possible.
And now, that's just using the same sort of grape, the same varietal, right? But you also do some where you mix the different varietals. Now, talk to me about this. How do you come up with some of the blends?
So blends are really popular in the wine industry in America, and they're extremely popular in Europe. And what a blend does for you is you can take a little bit of Cabernet and a little bit of Merlot, and the winemaker has a little bit more play in it, the fact that you can help the flavors along. So we make a winemaker's red in two different ways out of a couple different sets of grapes. So a Bordeaux from France is really a Cabernet Merlot blend and the choice of seven other grapes. And with a winemaker, you can take 50% of this and 30% of that and 20% of that. And you'll have a little blending afternoon where you're going to decide which flavors of which vintages brings out the most flavor. So Cabernet is a really big, thick skin grape with a lot of tannins. Merlot is also rich and more cherry flavored, but it has less tannins. So they make a nice combination. You can add a little bit of Petit Verdot to that, which is a very dark, almost mocha-ish, and that adds another little bit of texture. So kind of like when you're cooking and you're adding all these different spices, the winemaker with a blend has a lot of flexibility in bringing out the flavors. And to be honest, it's kind of fun and it's super popular right now. So we make a nice Cab Merlot blend, and we also do a Syrah-based blend from our vineyards here too that has a little bit more red fruit flavors and a little bit lighter, earthier. Both fun, delicious.
So this region is filled with wineries. You were telling me there's the Cascade Foothills, something like that. What's the?
So we're part of the Cascade Foothills Wine Growers Association. So there's 15 wineries here. We're about a half an hour south of Portland, out in uncongested farmlands, and you can go visit us at St. Joseph's and other 14 other wineries, all run by families, small lot production. And now Oregon, when we started, we're one of the first 30 wineries in Oregon, so planted in 78, vintage in 83, and now there are about 600 wineries. So it's a big business. It's the number one crop now growing in Oregon. It just passed hazelnuts and other fruits. So it's a big, you know, it's a big industry. And the fun thing about Oregon, it's 1% of the nation's wine business, but it's 15% of all wines rated above 90 points come from Oregon. And that's because there's a lot of folks like us that are smaller producers that take a lot more time, and we are a little bit more careful in the grapes we're growing, and we're growing less fruit per acre, which means more flavor per acre.
I'm scared to ask, but I've got to. Have the has big money out of California been coming in and buying up land? What's the industry like as far as that?
So Oregon's wine industry is pretty diverse, and there has been some investment, outside investment, from some fairly big size wineries in the last year. There's probably a dozen or two dozen that have changed hands. You know, it's mostly California money, because whether you like it or not, cost of living in Oregon and cost of land is, you know, half the price of California. So that's driving part of it. And there is a lot of individuality in the wine industry. So you got 600 wineries, and there's probably 25 or 50 that are big professional operations in Oregon. But even the biggest wineries in Oregon wouldn't even crack the top 50 in California. So this is a, I don't want to say a cottage industry, but we are not driven by multi-million dollar corporate wineries in Oregon. It's investment into smaller lot productions. And people have to understand that Pinot Noir is the most difficult and most subtle wine to make and to grow. So it's not like you're going to have two buck chuck Pinot Noir, because you just can't grow that much per acre. And as far as investments, you know, we've had friends that have a great winery, and they've had investments to be able to market their wines across the country, which that takes, you know, that takes time and money and salaries to have somebody in New York City selling the wine door to door. The investment hasn't come here. You know, our kids asked us, if somebody knocked on our door with $2 million, would we leave? And we said no. And they said, well, what about $10 million? And I said, well, after my wife stops doing backflips, we'll have to see what happens.
You are listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Today we're talking about wine and the development of Oregon wine culture with Carl McKnight from the St. Joseph's Winery in Canby, Oregon. We'll get back to that interview in a minute. First, some history and some numbers. According to Professor Patrick McGovern with the University of Pennsylvania, people have been making wine-like drinks since at least the year 7000 BCE. Evidence found in northern China of fermented beverages made from rice, honey, and fruit was found. That's 9,000 years ago. Previously, the earliest evidence of wine had been found in the Zagros Mountains of Iran. That dated back to 5400 BCE. The pharaohs of Egypt were drinking imported wine around 3150 BCE, finally developing their own wine industry 150 years later, approximately. Fast forwarding a few thousand years, wine has spread around the world. Here in the United States, there are wineries and vineyards in every single state. According to Wine Business Monthly magazine, in February of 2017, there were 7,367 bonded wineries in the United States. The top state is California with 3,035. That's followed by Washington with 681 and Oregon with 450. My home state of Iowa has 100 bonded wineries. The states with the fewest wineries are Alaska, Hawaii, Mississippi, and Nevada, which the magazine says have 4 bonded wineries each. Now again, those are only the bonded wineries. According to the state of Oregon, a bonded winery is a company that qualifies as a standalone winery. It's responsible for all production activities that take place on the federal bonded premises and record keeping that documents those activities and filing reports about the activities to the Federal Treasury Department's Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, otherwise called the TTB. But then there are these so-called virtual wineries. Basically, people buy grapes in bulk and then contract with real wineries or custom crush facilities to use their winemaking equipment. Or they just buy wine in bulk that are produced by these real bonded wineries, and then the virtual wineries just bottle it with their own labels. There are 1,724 of these so-called virtual wineries in the United States. Most of them are in California, which has 1,167 virtual wineries. They're followed by Oregon, which has 263 virtual wineries. Combine the real wineries with the virtual ones, and the top three states are still California, with a total now of 4,202, Washington, with a total of 747, and Oregon, with a total of 713. According to Nielsen, the total dollar volume of retail sales of table wine in the United States in 2016 was $13.8 billion. The Oregon Wine Board reports that in 2015, the most recent year for which data are available, the total value of wine production in the state was $175 million. Now that's just the production value. Sales by Oregon wineries in 2015 totaled $470 million. The Wine Board also estimates that the statewide economic impact of wine was $3.35 billion. Now that includes tourism revenue, wages related to Oregon wine jobs, you know, which could include waiters and sommeliers. According to the Tax Foundation, as of the first of the year, Oregon's excise tax on wine ranked 31st out of 50 states at 67 cents per gallon. Our neighbor to the north, Washington, was ranked 25th at 87 cents per gallon. California was much closer to the bottom at 44th, with a state excise tax of 20 cents per gallon. According to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, in the 2014-2016 biennium, the state only got $36 million in revenue from taxes on beer and wine combined. Most of the OLCC's revenue comes from sale of distilled spirits and hard liquor. According to research by the Federal Centers for Disease Control, excessive alcohol use cost the state of Oregon more than $3.5 billion in 2010. That includes lost productivity, healthcare costs, criminal justice costs, and more. Well, now that your head is filled with numbers, dear listener, let's get back to the wine and our interview with Carl McKnight. What are some of the varietals that people aren't familiar with that they should be familiar with? I mean, one of my favorites is a Viognier. It's a lovely white wine. It's an acquired taste, but I love a good Viognier. And most people have never even heard of it. What are some varietals people should maybe consider that they probably aren't aware of yet?
So there are some odd named varietals that people just shun because they don't know the name, and it's much easier to say, I want a Pinot Gris, or I want a Chardonnay, or I want a Merlot. So we have Gewürztraminer. So the family is German. Gewürz literally translates to spice in German, and Gewürztraminer literally translates to spicy town, and it is a very aromatic grape with tropical fruit and spice notes. And most people think, well, I drank that when I was underage, or I drank it right when I got out of college and it's too sweet for me. So we make an off-dry version that is so beautiful and lovely that if you haven't tried a Gewürztraminer and you can't pronounce it, it's okay. It's a beautiful grape that you should try. And we also do Riesling. And Riesling has a kind of a bad rap from the Blue Nun days. But Riesling, again, is one of the most sought-after grapes in the world because it is so aromatic and so floral and so fresh that if you were poured a Riesling versus a Pinot Gris and you weren't told what they were, 9 times out of 10, you would drink the Riesling. So the winemaker has control over the sugar content. And, you know, people think that those two, that Riesling and Gewürz are too sweet, but the winemaker can make them dry or sweet. And we make ours not sweet. We make them off dry, so they're balanced. And those are fun, fun, fun. And the other thing that's a good upcoming grape is Gamay. So Gamay Noir. It's a cousin of Pinot. It's the most popular grape in France. We did some cuttings that when I went to viticulture school, we made cuttings and we grafted over some of our other vines to Gamay. It's a little bit more fruit forward and a little bit more zippy than Pinot Noir. It's a little bit darker. And what's fun about Gamay is you can drink it fresh and fruity. And so most Americans know Gamay as Beaujolais. That's the wine that is from France that's you buy it in America. I think it's November 17th. It's, you know, sold 3 weeks after harvest. We do ours a little differently. We release it around Memorial Day after about 6 months. But it's a fun, fresh, like I said, zippy wine that's also, you know, great, something different in Oregon.
Beaujolais. So Beaujolais Nouveau. Yeah. What are those? That's, oh.
That's a Gamay.
Yeah. Beaujolais Nouveau is a Gamay, a version of Gamay.
Because that's, I mean, most people would be familiar. That's the one thing about with the French and having the appellation control, and it's named for the region, so Bordeaux and these, and people don't know what the grapes are. So that's, wow, that's interesting stuff.
Yeah, we have lots of labeling.
And, you know, Oregon, we're purists, so we have our own labeling laws on top of labeling laws. So we can't say champagne, even though in California they say champagne. We can only say sparkling. We can't say port because that's from Portugal. If the wine has 90% of that certain grape in it, then we can call it Pinot Noir or Merlot. If it has 90% Pinot Noir, then it's Pinot Noir. If it's California, only needs to have 75% Pinot Noir to be Pinot Noir. And so in Oregon, just like, you know, in many things, we try to be purists. And to be honest, that's why the industry quality is so much better as a whole than California or other areas that have a little looser wine laws.
I'm saving the best for last. Uh-oh. It's this is Free Culture Radio. We're about wine and culture, the culture, the thing. And one of the most important elements of wine culture is that bloody French word terroir. It seems pretty simple, but for some reason it can be confusing for folks. Tell me about terroir.
Well, I can't pronounce it either, but the thought is that the land is going to influence the flavors of the grapes. And so on our 64 acres, we have 5 different soil types. And at some point, I believe the whole terroir thing. And at some point, I'm a little bit more practical and go, that's a bunch of marketing. However, I can totally tell 2 of our hillsides apart from the other ones because they taste different. And it's the same clone of grapes, and it's the same harvest, and those grapes taste different. And Oregon has these things called American Viticulture Areas, or AVAs. And in Oregon, the Willamette Valley is one of those. And inside the Willamette Valley, there are 4 or 10 different AVAs. My hillside tastes better than your hillside. And so there are certainly a lot of believers in AVAs and that whole terroir thing. We have the vineyard called the Hot Rocks, which is in a super rocky site along the Moala River in the big city of Barlow, which is about 50 people. And that site, because it's rockier, is hotter than the rest of our sites. And the Pinot Noir that's grown there comes out with a little bit more pepper and spice. And it is not a coincidence that we grow organic peppers in the field next to it. And you can certainly smell and taste the pepper in the wine there. And that's a little bit of the terroir where the flavors of the soil are seeping into the fruit. And that's the myth and the mystery and the legend and all the things that people want to talk about after you open that bottle of wine.
So any closing thoughts for our listeners?
You know, we live in a great state. There's lots of great coffee, lots of great beer, and lots of great wine. The best thing anybody can do from Oregon is when you go to the store, is grab a bottle of Oregon wine every time you buy something from Chile or Argentina and support the guys that are keeping the industry going. And, you know, it's a tough life making, you know, growing grapes and making wine, and sure puts a smile on our face when people around town can have a glass and enjoy what we do for a living. It took us 11 months to get that stuff into the bottle. And we sure hope you enjoy it.
Different stuff. Carl, thank you so much. And enjoy the heat, man. Well, that's it for this edition of Free Culture Radio. I want to thank my guest Carl McKnight from St. Joseph's Winery in Canby, Oregon. Many thanks to our engineer, and thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio is produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. Free Culture Radio has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/KBOO Free Culture Radio. Please give it a like. You can find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.